Welcome back. Our guest this week is State Budget Director Chris Kolb, staring down a $3 billion state deficit. Our lead story, the governor has good news for gamblers, bad news for drinkers. On the OTR panel, Chad Livengood, Lauren Gibbons, and Bill Ballinger. Sit in with us as we get the inside out, Off the Record.
Production of Off the Record is made possible in part by the following. Business Leaders for Michigan has a strategic plan to make Michigan a top 10 state in the nation for jobs, personal income, and a healthy economy. Learn more at michigansroadtotop10.com. And now, this edition of Off the Record with Tim Skubick.
Thank you very much. Welcome back to Off the Record. A rather busy week in our town this week. The governor was at it trying to clamp down on the cases. And Lauren, what did she do to all of us?
Yeah, so there were a few more restrictions added this week. We did see some more restrictions added back into northern Michigan and the Upper Peninsula. Indoor bar service was closed up there again. And throughout the state, indoor gatherings, were now limited again to 10 people or less. So it's definitely significant. We previously had a little bit more leeway throughout the state, but especially in northern Michigan, they had enjoyed some loosened restrictions compared to the rest of the state. And now, while they still have a little bit more leeway, they're a little bit closer to the rest of the state now in terms of what they can do. So that was in response to a slight uptick in cases. The governor has said that she is hoping that these additional restrictions will kind of help limit the spread a little more and potentially make it easier in the fall to do things like get kids back to school and other priorities in the hopes that maybe the coronavirus cases will go down a little bit. But that remains to be seen.
As our guest a couple of weeks ago, Representative Beau LaFave, a Republican of Iron Mountain, said, Detroit hit the jackpot with its casino regulations loosened up by the governor, and northern Michigan took a huge hit. So you got to remember right now, this is prime vacation time, northern Michigan and the Upper Peninsula. And so the governor's order comes right now at an absolutely terrible time for businesses and people interested in recreation and enjoyment in northern Michigan.
Tim, the Detroit casinos have been lobbying for weeks to get reopened. The Gaming Commission effectively approved their reopening plan the first week in June. So it's been quite a long time. They have been sitting empty for nearly 4 months. And so this reopening at 15% capacity, patrons will have to be wearing masks. There'll be temperature screenings. It's not going to be the same type of gaming experience. At the same time, the tribal casinos, which the state does not regulate, is they're a sovereign nation. They've been reopened since the end of May, many of them, or early June. And so there's been a competitive disadvantage argument being made. Plus, the Ohio casinos have been open for well over a month and a half now. And so the governor had been facing a lot of pressure to reopen the casinos. But then, yeah, you couple that with these new restrictions in bars and restaurants in northern Michigan and the UP, or rather just bars that sell most of their, more than 70% of their gross receipts come from alcohol. This is being described as a gut punch by many of them. And House Speaker Lee Chatfield kind of yesterday raised questions about what is the data, what is the science that says this is necessary to, where are the actual spikes? He said it looks more like political science.
I thought it was interesting that the governor had a press briefing on, I think it was a Tuesday or Wednesday, okay, in which he gave no hint at all that this stuff was coming. And then the next day, without the glare of the cameras and without reporters to cross-examine her, she pops this stuff. I got the feeling, although she didn't say that in her statements, but it would have been interesting to ask her, I think this governor is frustrated. I think she has said, wear your mask until she's blue in the face, and the numbers have not changed. She keeps saying, mask up, the numbers keep going up. So I think this was not out of frustration, but out of a deeper concern that if she didn't do something, send some sort of a signal that we've got to button down here, that this thing would get out of hand. It is not out of hand yet. The hospitalization numbers are good. It's not off the charts. The death rate, we're number 41 in the country. That certainly is not good news, but it certainly could be worse. And so I think this was not an act of desperation, but an act for the governor to send a signal that she's serious about this. The only problem is during the summertime in this beautiful weather that we're enjoying, even in the midst of this pandemic, not everybody's on the same page, Lauren.
Yeah, and especially with the nice weather, I think it is harder to make the case to stay home. You know, don't leave the house. Don't try to see your friends. And there are a lot of people who, you know, have been taking advantage of the nice weather and, you know, the loose restrictions, and in some cases that has resulted in smaller outbreaks around the state, depending on the situation. But I think there's some concern that, you know, if these large gatherings are allowed to happen unabated or unchecked, then you know it could potentially get worse again, I think is the fear. But I also think that it's hard. It's going to be hard to continue making the case to Michigan residents. They've been in some sort of limitation since March, and I think a lot of people are starting to feel, well, it's summer, I can be outside. They're starting to make justifications for their actions, like, I've been pretty safe, so maybe I can do this. So I think it is over time, especially in these warmer weather, going to continue to be harder to make the case that this is the right thing to do.
Tim, I think the Unlock Michigan people have got a gift from the governor, impetus for their petition drive on a legislative proposal that could be enacted into law by the legislature without the governor's signature to scale the governor's powers back. These Unlock Michigan people are being flooded with people who want to sign. Republican legislators are raising money off it by holding fundraisers and having people come and sign the petitions. So I think what the governor has done now, I'm not going to say it's backfiring in terms of acceptance by the public, but certainly she's getting a lot of pushback, and the people who want to scale back her powers are taking advantage of it.
Yeah, and again,
but
Tim.
Yep. Go ahead.
The big question is, what is the difference? I mean, is this new regulation to rein in Traverse City? And if that's the case, why is the bar in Gold City, Michigan, in the Upper Peninsula in Chippewa County? Why is that little biker bar being penalized for this and being forced outside? There was no explanation. Like a lot of things, like when she's extended the emergency orders, they are late in the day news dumps. This press release came out at about 7:40 p.m. after the governor got off of CNN and didn't even talk about it on CNN. And so this stuff is just giving, as Bill said, just giving fuel to the fire over the Unlock Michigan campaign. And you know, the governor is going to have to answer for this eventually.
Well, does anybody think this petition drive is going to be successful, that they can gather these names in a limit? They don't even have 180 days. It's a smaller window than what they normally would have.
Yes, they can do it. Yes, it's been done before. It's a tougher task this time because 340,000 is a higher bar, and they got to do it in 180 days. And by the way, that extends beyond the end of this year. But believe me, the enthusiasm is out there to sign these petitions. That's what you need in a petition drive, passion by the people who want to sign. You don't need a majority of the population. You just need people who really are angry. And there are a lot of angry people out there. You just go to social media about what the governor has done, and they want to sign these petitions.
Tim, I also picked up this week that Michigan – go ahead, Chad.
Tim, all of this hinges around schools and the reopening of schools. That is what everybody is on pins and needles about right now. If we can't get 1.5 million school children back into school, including mine, we are going to have economic malaise for a long time. And that is really what all of this hinges on all these different measures. That's what the mask, enforcement really hinges on, is if we get continued upward swing of the curve, which is continuing to go up, we're over 700 average cases a day now. We will not have schools open September 8th, the day after Labor Day.
Let me just do an addendum to the comment on the Unlock Michigan, if I could, Lauren. I've also found out this way. Michigan Right to Life, the organization, is not involved in this petition drive, but they are providing volunteers who have worked on petition drives. And up until recently, Right to Life has had a very exemplary record on petition drives. So those people are involved as well. But I got to turn the page to Jocelyn Benson. She told us the other day that the election results after Tuesday could be a little late coming in, but the really bugaboo here is November. And she is very concerned that if it takes 2 or 3 days or even more for the election to be certified as to who won or lost, all sorts of weird things will happen in the interim. And Chad, really, I think this is a ticking time bomb. We have replaced hanging chads with mail-in ballots as a real bugaboo in this election issue. Yay or nay?
I've been waiting for the hanging chad joke from you for years, Tim.
There it is, baby.
Well, look, in this pandemic, the Postal Service has been somewhere along the lines of horrible as far as of delivering anything in a matter of time. And so the arguments about mail-in voting are gained against mail-in voting are gaining some steam because the post office can't deliver. You had clerks this week say, do not put it in the mail. Bring it to City Hall. And this is a message to anybody this watching this weekend. You should manually walk that thing to City Hall on Monday because it will not arrive at the clerk's office. It may, in some way, sometimes mail works. It gets redirected across the state and backwards before it finally arrives in your mailbox. So there is a whole bunch of issues that, the pro mail-in vote absentee ballot people need to really answer. And at the same time, you've just got a whole host of other issues. I mean, Detroit is worried right now they're not going to have enough people at the polls. They've been out actively, every clerk, not just Detroit, but all the other cities have been out actively recruiting new poll workers because they're trying to get the 60, 70, 80-year-olds who normally work the polls to stay home because they're most medically vulnerable and susceptible to COVID-19. Of course, the governor has exempted polling locations from wearing masks, which a lot of people are shaking their heads, wondering why that carve out. If there's any place that you could possibly spread the virus, it would be a crowded polling location. So, yeah, we got a lot of issues. We're going to see some of them play out on Tuesday in the primary.
But, Bill, speak to the point that Donald Trump has already sent the signal that there's going to be some shenanigans after this election, one way or the other. You can take that to the bank, and this fight over who won the election could drag on. Is Ms. Benson onto something, do you think?
I think it depends on what happens with the marquee races, and there are really only two at the state level in November. That's president and U.S. Senate. Beyond that, I mean, if the results are delayed in these other contests for Congress or for the state house, I don't think it's going to make that much difference unless, let's say, control of the state house of representatives hangs in the balance or maybe a particular congressional district. So I think people are going to be looking at president, U.S. senator. If that's a blowout on both sides, I don't think it's going to be that big a factor. But in other states, it may be a big factor.
I think Michigan has the potential, if this thing is close, and let's remember that nobody said Trump could win Michigan before. If this thing is close and it's taking 2 or 3 days, she's concerned that people will question the integrity. She said, called them bad actors, which was code for Donald Trump. She didn't use his name. I think this is a ticking time bomb. I really do. Speaking about ticking time bombs, let's call in the state budget director who's dealing with one of his own. Mr. Kolb, how you doing?
Good morning, Tim. Great to be here.
Yeah, did you like that segue? No applause for that, apparently.
Okay. No, I know. Let's do shit.
Hey, okay, I'm making this stuff up as we go along, guys, okay? Chad, why don't you start it out, eh?
I'll pick up right where you left off, Tim. Mr. Budget Director, how do you intend to defuse this $3 billion budget bomb you've got in your lap right now?
Well, you know, I think there's a couple things that we have to wait for. First is we will have a third special revenue estimating conference in August. That will give us better information on our revenue picture. And then also we need to see some action at the federal level to assist states and local governments, as we've seen in the, you know, the U.S. House passed HEROES Act, and we didn't see in the McConnell plan that was revealed this early this week.
Without help from the federal government, are you going to be unable to really solve this?
I think if the federal government doesn't provide us with assistance, and not just Michigan, but all of the 50 states who need assistance right now, we will have some really hard decisions to make. We will have to look at everything and try to find a path forward. You know, luckily, we've been able to work on a bipartisan basis. We've kept our communication lines open at the appropriations level, and we've all agreed that we need to have better information. We need assistance from the federal government, and together we'll find a path forward.
Budget Director, how much are you hoping for from the federal government in a ballpark number, perhaps? What's the best case scenario in terms of how much the state could be or should be getting from the federal government in your mind?
Well, the best case, you know, scenario would be for the Senate to pass the HEROES Act. You know, that had $875 billion for state and local governments. The state portion was $500 billion. As I said earlier, the McConnell plan did not provide any assistance. So, you know, being a realist, I don't believe that will necessarily get what's in the HEROES Act, but I also don't believe we're going to get what's not in the McConnell plan. So hopefully there's a lot of, you know, a lot of room there to come to a compromise and provide needed assistance. Otherwise, we'll be looking at some severe cuts here, not just in Michigan, but across the country as well.
Mr. Budget Director, can you rule out a revenue enhancement in order to balance the budget? Rule it out. Can you?
I think that, you know, if the federal government steps up and provides not just Michigan, but the rest of the states with their needed federal assistance, I think we'll have a much easier time solving this budget situation. If they don't, then I think we'll have to look at everything and everything will be on the table. So at this point, I can't rule anything in or anything out, but we do have our eyes on that August revenue estimating conference and on DC right now. So we're asking everyone to, you know, contact our congressional district, our congressional delegation, asking them for help. You saw on Tuesday, the business community is united on asking the federal government for assistance, not just for Michigan, but for all 50 states.
But wait a minute, this is not your first rodeo. What does your gut tell you about the need for a revenue increase? Be honest with me.
You know, really, at this point, it's too early, Jim, to really, you know, decide what is and what isn't going to be utilized to solve the budget crisis. You know, we just finished fiscal year 20. I seem to have worked on that for over a year, probably about a year and a half. So now that we have that taken care of, we'll start to work on fiscal year 21. And that really has begun with opening up communications with the appropriations chairs. We've pledged to meet with them on a regular basis. As I said, our eyes are on the August revenue estimating conference, when we'll have a much better idea as to what our revenue outlook looks like. And then on DC, making sure that we get the needed assistance from the federal government.
Mr. Director, as you know, our governor has not gotten along all that well with a Republican-controlled legislature during her 19 months in office so far. But you have been able to cobble together a deal with the cooperation of the governor and the Appropriation Committee chairs and the entire Republican-controlled legislature on this budget. I mean, how do you account for the fact that you guys have been able to get it together and get the job done when there's so much acrimony going on about a whole bunch of other issues on the side?
Well, I think, there's a couple layers to that question. The budget is the one thing that we have to do. We have to get a budget passed, and it has to be balanced. That's number one. And I think you've seen a lot of cooperation at all levels when it's been dealing with the budget. The budget framework that was worked out was agreed upon by the governor, the majority leader, and the speaker. So that shows you that there is, you know, a level of trust and ways that we can work together. And then we have utilized, you know, just keeping open good lines of communication with the appropriations chairs and the legislature, and just, you know, talking honestly about the situation we're facing, what tools we have, and how we want to move forward. So there's no simple recipe, but it isn't rocket science either. We just have to keep working together, look at what we have to get done, what are the options before us, and work through any issues that we have.
Director, Michigan schools are likely going to be expected to start in some manner before the state comes up with a finalized budget for next fiscal year. What is the administration doing to perhaps reassure school districts that are kind of looking at ways to reopen safely or to educate their students virtually in the fall? What is your administration doing to ensure that there's going to be enough money there for them as they embark in this new frontier?
Well, it is the Whitmer administration, she put together a roadmap for schools to follow in how to open up, regardless of what phase they are in, whether it's 3, 4, or 5. But these decisions are going to be made at the local level, where local educators, administrators, and parents will make those decisions locally for what's best for their community and for their kids. But we have tried to be as supportive as we can for the education community. We provided, even though we did cut dollars in the budget, we were able to provide, twice that amount in federal CRF dollars that the schools can use to help pay for eligible COVID-19 response costs. And so we hope that will give them needed resources so they can get moving forward on this coming school year.
When you say everything is on the table in terms of potential budget cuts, if the federal government doesn't provide Michigan with sufficient help here, are schools also on the table? Is there a possibility that schools could see funding cuts should the state not get additional help from the feds?
Listen, 90% of our general fund and school aid fund goes to schools, the colleges and universities, local governments, public safety, and healthcare services. So if we don't get help, we're going to have to, make some cuts. I can't cut enough out of state government to solve this budget deficit. I can eliminate 12 departments plus the legislature and the judiciary branch and still not have enough money to fill that hole. And you could throw in the entire budget stabilization fund, and I don't come to $3 billion. So without aid from the federal government, we are facing cuts that no one wants to see, whether that's in education, public safety, or healthcare services. So we really do need assistance from the federal government.
We have 2 minutes left. Chad, go ahead. We're going to do overtime. Go ahead, Chad.
Yeah, defund the legislature. That's an interesting idea. Chris, why not take this time?
I can't do that, but the legislature itself can do that if they wanted. I don't see that as one of the options.
Probably not, no. why not take this time right now to make a big push on tax reform and go out and say, you know, it's time for General Motors and Ford and Chrysler to give up those $600 million of mega credits we give them every year. And you know what? It's time to stop exempting every service that isn't taxed, that most states tax. And maybe it's time to actually pay for fixing roads rather than just letting them crumble more. Why not make that that public plea right now?
You know, I think, you know, that fiscal policy is something that can be included in our conversations. But right now, it's really, as I said, we need better information on our revenue. We need to see what the federal government's going to do before we start announcing, you know, these other options. But I think if we don't get the federal, you know, federal assistance, that there will be conversations. We'll have to look at these things. But I'm not ruling anything in or anything out at this moment. But I said, you know, after the May revenue estimating conference, I do understand where families are at, where businesses are at. So I'm sensitive to all of that, as well as what the critical needs here in the state of Michigan and what our residents need right now. So all of that has to be part of the formula if the federal government doesn't step up.
All right, Mr. Director, thanks for hanging out. We're going to do an overtime segment right after we do close credits, then come back to WKAR.org. We've got a lot of really good questions to ask the budget director, who's holding up so well, but we'll see if we can change that right after these close credits. WKAR.org for more Off the Record with Chris Cole.
Production of Off the Record is made possible in part by the following. Business Leaders for Michigan has a strategic plan to make Michigan a top 10 state in the nation for jobs, personal income, and a healthy economy. Learn more at michigansroadtotop10.com. For more Off the Record, visit WKAR.org. Michigan Public Television stations have contributed to the production costs of Off the Record with Tim Skubick.